Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court, my name is Paul Robinson. I'm the attorney representing Appellants Messina Products, LLC, and Appellees Stephen and Florence Messina. The sole issue before the Court with respect to the Appellant Messina Products case is whether the lower court erred in finding that under the Grotzinger test, there was sufficient evidence of continuous and regular business activity being performed by Messina Products, LLC, to justify establishing that it was establishing a trade or business. And we assert that the district court did so err. We're asking either that that issue be reversed or that it be remanded. And the reason why we would suggest a remand is it appeared one of the factors the court relied on was a suggestion that Messina Products, LLC, had an employee, one or more employees.
But that only appears in the court's Rule 59E order. It's not in the original opinion at
That's
all.
Correct.
And I guess it takes me to one question I have for you, which is whether it's your position that a court may not consider the acts of agents in conducting this trade or business analysis.
I believe that the court may consider the acts of agents. The lower court did not in this particular case, but I believe it's within the court's authority.
In what sense do you think the court did not consider the acts of agents? I mean, I think that's the correct answer, to tell you the truth, because all business entities, you know, act through human agents of some kind, and some have the label employee, and some have the label independent agent, and others have perhaps other labels. But it seems that the court did take a look at the acts of agents.
Well, with respect to Messina Products, LLC, there was no reference to acts of agents for that party. There was a discussion in the court's opinion as it related to Stephen and Florence Messina, and that was whether employees of Messina Trucking would be considered as their agents, and the court rejected that. The court said that those employees were acting in their capacity as agents of a tenant as opposed to agents of a landlord.
But a tenant controlled by the same landlord.
Yes,
right?
And the district court did recognize that that is an unusual circumstance, but made a concerted effort to try to determine which hat the actors were wearing at the time, whether it was the hat of the landlord and the hat or the hat of the tenant. And he went through the same type
if we could follow up just on that for a second. With respect to the evidence that Messina Trucking employees were working to maintain the residential rental properties on Merrill Road, I believe, how could they have been acting as agents of the tenant as opposed to agents of the landlord?
If you look at the underlying purpose for why the Merrill Road properties were acquired, the testimony was that the first acquisition was to allow the Messina Trucking Company to expand its garage areas. So that property was primarily purchased for the benefit of Messina Trucking. The second property, similarly, was purchased for Messina Trucking's benefit because it allowed both east and west egress and ingress areas, which would substantially save time, about 10 to 15 minutes each time a truck had to leave that.
So that's why they mowed the lawns and plowed the snow and took care of the residential properties?
Because those properties
Not
benefited
for Mr. Messina.
Those properties benefited the corporation, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Is it correct that the Merrill Road rental property was owned only by Mr. Messina individually?
That's correct.
His wife was on the title to the Messina Trucking property?
She was on the title to one of four lots that made up the Messina Trucking property.
Okay. On the question of the rental property, you've asked us to reconsider the holding in SCOF BP or whatever that acronym is.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, have you found any cases holding that a lessor to the withdrawing employer was not in a trade or business if under common control?
Yes, district court level, not at the circuit. But in the case of Central States versus Nagy, which was decided approximately 3 months before this case was decided.
Anything else?
Nothing further.
That's on appeal.
That is on appeal. That is correct.
And that had a formal lease arrangement, the net lease that put the maintenance responsibilities on the tenant, correct?
That is correct.
And we don't have that here.
We don't have a written document, but we have the undisputed testimony of the witnesses that there was a triple net arrangement that put the burden on the employees of the tenant as opposed to on the landlord.
Can I ask you, one of the issues that you raised, Mr. Robinson, on this rental issue has to do with Messina Trucking stopped paying Mr. Messina and Mrs. Messina rent for the property that was being used back in about 2005, right?
The testimony was it stopped at some point before 2005. So the year wasn't fixed. It was just known to be 2005 or earlier, but yes.
Presumably that worked to the benefit of Messina Trucking, right?
Correct.
Which worked to the benefit of the Messinas, so it's basically a wash, right?
Well, I would argue that it worked to the benefit of any unsecured creditor of Messina Trucking, such as the pension fund, because Messina Trucking was not having to pay for the use of the property, which would have been an expense.
Right, but the pension fund isn't very happy right now with Messina, right?
Understood.
So, okay. Yes. But I guess my question with respect to the timing question is, let's suppose the withdrawing employer stops paying rent 2 months before it withdraws. Would that be sufficient under your theory for us to say, well, that's not a trade or business based on the connection with the withdrawing employer?
That would have to be analyzed under a totality of the facts. Whether 1 month is enough, 2 months, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, I think that the court would have – I'm sorry, not
how,
the court.
How are we supposed to give any guidance to district courts by saying the totality of the circumstances lets us measure that?
Well, Your Honor, if I may, I believe that that's actually an issue that under ERISA is reserved for the arbitrator and not to be determined by the courts.
Deciding whether there's a trade or business?
Let me okay. Take a scalpel to it for a second.
Okay.
Under the established law, the district court has the authority to determine in the first instance whether a company is engaged as a trade or business and is part of the common control group. Once it's been established that that entity is or was at one point in time part of the control group, if the issue then is raised that by the time the withdrawal occurred, that entity is no longer part of the control group, the arbitrator has to make that determination whether there is a continuation of control group status.
But, you know, the fact that you say that confuses me no end, because it looks like that's exactly what the district court did here. The district court decides that Messina products is part of the control group, that it's in a trade or business. I realize that there's arbitration going on, so it seems to me the district judge has done exactly what he should have done. And I might add that I think your analysis of the lease is incomplete. You're focusing on the fact that you have to pay rent if you have a lease, but if you have a lease, you also have a certain property right over the property. You have a use right, a use and occupancy right. And so taking this all off the books is something that I can well imagine the fund thinks something that allows Messina to kind of hide part of its assets.
Your Honor, there may be some confusion as to what I believe is reserved for the arbitrator here. The issue as it relates to Messina products was properly before the district court and is properly before this court. The question as it relates to Stephen and Florence Messina was properly before the district court to determine whether at one point in time they were a member of the control group. If the determination was that they were, it is my contention that whether they continued to be when rent was not paid for a period of years is an issue that would be reserved for arbitration.
So if you lose in court,
go to arbitration? This is the first time you've mentioned this.
It's in my brief, Your Honor.
Yeah, and but it wasn't before the district court. You didn't say anything to the district court about arbitration vis-a-vis Stephen and Florence.
I believe it was footnoted before the district court in a brief.
Okay.
Well, if I understand this correctly, in essence, you're saying if you lose in court, you want to be able to relitigate this in arbitration.
Well, let me respond back to the prior question, if I may.
Okay.
It was raised before the district court with respect to Auburn Supply, and the court acknowledged that there was a determination that Auburn Supply at one point in time was part of the control group, but that issue, whether it continued to be one, proceeds through an arbitration.
Could you stated this is your belief about the scope of the arbitration. Could you direct us to some authority on that point?
Yes. At page 13 of our refiled response brief, there are citations to Doherty versus Teamster Pension Fund, which is a Third Circuit case, 16 F3rd, 1386, as well as the decision of this case, Central States versus Slotsky, at 956 F. 2nd, 1369.
Thank you.
Ms. Robinson, if we were to track your analysis on when the district court can make the initial determination about participation in the control group, but you seem to then suggest there's a temporal aspect that follows that analysis that it has to be reserved for the arbitrator. Could you give me a specific example of how the district court would make the assessment, which has to impact necessarily a calendar of some sort, to decide if you're in the control group? And then give me the subset of facts that you would say has to be reserved in any setting for the arbitrator.
Well, if we were to look at the instant case, Your Honor, if the court below was looking at the entire lease arrangement between Mr. Messina and Messina Trucking to determine whether there was ever control group status. The court could do what he did in this case and said, no, there was not sufficient evidence that the Grotzinger test was met and they're not part of the group. And that would close the analysis. But if the court had reached the alternative determination that, yes, there was sufficient evidence of trade or business conduct being performed, and relied in part upon the payment of rent for that decision, that would be the issue that would then have to go to arbitration because the payment of rent had ceased. See that
so
my.
If there's any interruption in a lease arrangement, you would say it has to be sent to an arbitrator?
And not in all circumstances. In this case, there was not only a non-payment of rent, but it wasn't booked. It was no longer maintained as an obligation. If it had been maintained as a book obligation, that issue I don't think would go before the arbitrator.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson.
Thank you.
Mr. Lee?
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Charles Lee, and I represent the Central States Pension Fund and its trustee, Arthur H. Bonta, Jr. There's obviously two issues that are presented in this appeal, and the first one is whether the Messina's rental activities should be deemed a trade or business for withdrawal liability purposes. And then the second issue is whether Messina Products was a trade or business. I'll address the Messina's rental activities first. The district court held that it wasn't a trade or business, but obviously that decision came before this court's decision in Scoff BP. In Scoff BP, this court held that leasing to the withdrawing employer is categorically a trade or business.
Now, aren't there some distinctions, though, between the facts in this case and those in Scoff BP?
With respect to, I don't think there are. With respect to the leasing to the withdrawing employer portion, the most important and really the only fact that I would argue that the court relied upon in Scott BP in holding that MCOF was a trade or business was the fact that it leased to the withdrawing company in that case.
Well, what I'm focusing on in particular is the fact that the Messinas, the individual two people, are not a formal business organization. They're individuals, and their leasing activities appear to be more informal than those that were before the court in Scott BP.
Right. I think that would be the only way to distinguish the two cases. But I think if you look at Scott BP, that decision was based on cases such as Dotello, Slotky, Coder. All of those cases also involved individuals leasing to the withdrawing company. Scott BP was the first case, in this court at least, where it involved a LLC withdrawing to the leasing to the withdrawing company. So I don't think that can be the basis for distinguishing Scott BP and this case.
Can I ask you a question, just following up for a second on this topic of Messina Trucking stopping the payment of rent in 2005? There seem to be two dramatically different ways of, or different inferences that people are drawing from that fact.
Right.
Could you tell me what your view is?
Sure. From our perspective, we think that that kind of plays right into what Congress sought to avoid by enacting MEPA, which was, in particular, 1301, which was to prevent fractionalization of assets. When you have a company, as Judge Hamilton pointed out, have a property where the property is owned by the individual that also owns the company that is using the property, there's obviously a lot of opportunities for, I guess, I don't know what the right word is.
Concealment of assets?
Right, exactly. And here, where they're not paying rent after 2005, and the landlord is not doing anything about it, that doesn't seem like that any bona fide commercial leasing arrangement in any sense. It seems like what you have is a rental of property that's owned by one person. The company is owned by that same person, so he's just treating it as one single operation. And that's exactly what 1301 was enacted to prevent from happening.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Lee, let me ask you, if I could, about the role of Messina Products. If I understand this correctly, its only asset was this partnership or LLC interest in the Lombardi entity?
Right. That was definitely one of the assets that was owned by Messina Products. There was a factual dispute as to whether Messina Products also owned multiple pieces of property. The district court, in its opinion, noted that the parties disagreed on that issue, but it stated that that was not an issue or important to the court's decision.
Well, I guess my concern is the facts that you and the district court rely on to hold Messina Products to be in a trade or business look like they would also be true of any passive holding company that just invested in, say, stock. You know, it's an LLC. It's got a separate tax ID number. It files tax returns. And then I guess the only other thing we've got is this operating agreement talking about some hypothetical future gravel business that, as near as we can tell, never came to fruition. So this seems like a pretty thin basis for finding a trade or business.
Right, but then when you also consider the fact that in their tax returns, they're representing that their principal business activity was real estate rental, and they're reporting business income on their tax returns, that would suggest to me that they are admitting that they are a trade or business. It is only when the Central States Pension Fund decides to sue them for withdrawal liability that they decide to say, well, we're not really a trade or business. We're really an investment vehicle for the Messinas.
So what would the correct tax form have been for passive investment earnings? Something different, you're saying, from the one they were using.
I'm really not sure what the proper tax form would have been, but I guess what I'm saying is that because they're representing that they're engaged in this business activity and they're reporting business income, that suggests that they are a trader business. And these are the same factors that this court has relied on in cases such as Scoff or Pioneer Ranch and also in Scoff BP. When you also consider the fact that they have an operating agreement, in that operating agreement, they say that they developed a business plan.
So actually, just to interrupt you for a second, in your brief on page 27, you indicate that the Form 1065 that they were using says, caution, include only trader business income and expenses on lines 1A through 22, and
right.
Those were the lines they were filling out.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I would also point out...
But can I just say, on the other hand, you know, there's a rule the courts acknowledge under which merely being a business owner doesn't make you automatically personally liable for your corporation's pension liabilities or, you know, I would assume multiple employer pension liabilities. So how have they stepped over that line from simply being the owners of these entities to individuals who themselves are in a trader business and thus swept in under the multiple employer test?
Are you speaking with respect to the Messina's rental activities or Messina products?
I was actually speaking of the individuals.
Oh, okay. With respect to the individuals, I think we're relying on Scoff BP and the whole fractionalization. And here that's what was involved. But even if you were to disregard Scoff BP, there's plenty of evidence regarding the activities that they were engaging in terms of running the properties. They bought the properties, they demolished the building, they built another building, they built multiple additions to the existing buildings.
And these are business buildings used in the business.
Right.
Yeah.
And in Fulkerson, this court stated that that type of activity is trader business activity. And then if you look also to their activity with respect to Merrill properties, we have the individuals negotiating the leases, paying property taxes, having the Messina Trucking employees do the maintenance work, take care of the lawn, remove the snow. All of that is trader business activity. Now, the district court disregarded all that because it stated that it would focus only on the Messina's personal conduct. But we would submit that that was a legal error. As you pointed out, the activities of an agent can be attributed to a landlord. And we would argue that that's what should have been done in this case, especially with respect to the activities regarding the Auburn property. The Messina Trucking employees had no obligation to do all that work. They weren't paid extra to do that work. The only reason they did it is because their boss owned it. And when all those activities are attributed to them, then we would argue that there is sufficient trader business activity and the district court erred as a matter of law.
Okay. So in a sense, you're saying that whether they were operating as sole proprietorships or whether they had personally incorporated themselves or made themselves an LLP or anything else doesn't really matter. Their formal business form, you're arguing, is unimportant. It's what they're doing.
Exactly. And we have argued in previous cases that a formal business entity should per se be a trader business.
Right.
But this court has declined to accept that. And so I think to be consistent, you would have to then say that the fact that individuals are involved doesn't necessarily mean then that you apply a different test.
Okay.
I don't have anything further to say, so in closing, I would just ask that the district court's decision regarding the Messina's rental activities be reversed and that their decision with respect to Messina products be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Ms. Robinson, you also had run out of time. Well, you used all your time, but you may have an additional minute.
The one thing I didn't have an opportunity really to address is the SCOFF VP decision, and I wanted to just focus briefly on that. In the White case, this court determined that there was a divergence between two separate tests. One applied in Dotello, one applied in personnel. And the court said that it has been resolved that the personnel, which is the Grotzinger test, is the test of this circuit. In SCOFF VP, the citation was to Dotello saying, we have categorically determined that if you are leasing property to the withdrawing employer, you are operating a trade or business, which is something separate from following the test that the
that's
court
why I, that's why I asked you earlier whether any cases, and I'll, let's take it beyond this circuit, have any cases held that leasing property to the withdrawing employer is not a trade or business?
Right, and my response remains, as far as I know, only Central States versus Nagy. Okay. In this case. But what I would point to the court very briefly is that even the fund argued that the Grotzinger test was the appropriate test to apply to the leasing activities of Mr. and Mrs. Messina. They acknowledged that at page 11 of their brief in this case. The decision in SCOFF BP as to MCOF is the correct decision, but under the wrong analysis. There was plenty of facts to support that that entity was operating as a trade or business. And I suggest that if the SCOFF BP decision, where the word categorically is written, is reviewed to use the word uniformly, that would be appropriate. I think there may have been an inadvertence there. And the fund itself makes that same use of the word uniformly when applying to it at page 39 of its brief. And I think that's how you reconcile it, is simply look at the word categorically as intended to be uniformly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.